talking with Jeremy Wade. His new show is called Mysteries of the Deep. It's on Discovery, and it is every bit as fun as his River Monsters show, but with a new twist. First four episodes, the Bermuda Triangle conspiracy, very interesting story, and then the Nazi toxic hell sub, Curse of the Kraken. I mean, we'll get into all of that coming up next. One of these is totally hooked me on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Jeremy Wade will take your calls coming up starting at the bottom of the hour, your comments and questions about his both his amazing career and this fun new show that's on Discovery called Mysteries of the Deep, which is a natural, if you might, you know, go with me on the current vernacular, a brand extension of River Monsters. But it's just, it's part of what he's always done so well, which is explore stuff underwater that other people either didn't even know about or don't have the background to try to understand. For example, I saw the episode, Jeremy, on the Curse of the Kraken, which had the very, you know, had a little bit more of the River Monsters kind of vibe to it because you were trying to find the proof of these giant squids. I thought in general, even leading into that episode, that science had made a lot of inroads into finding evidence of these giant squids. What did you find on your own in that investigation?
Well, you know, what I found was fascinating there was this amazing story that we uncovered about a racing yacht, a racing catamaran that was I believe it was leading the race, and then suddenly its speed just dropped dramatically, and you know, everybody's on board, that you know, you're in a situation where every second counts, and the speed has gone down. What's going on? And then they realized that something was hanging onto the bottom of the boat, and somebody went to a porthole, which was I think because the yacht had been sort of like tipped a bit to the side, it was pointing underwater, and saw this massive creature that was just hanging onto bits of the boat. Mm. So the crew are trying to prise it off. They're sort of hitting tentacles with lumps of wood and stuff like that. And I think after a while they gave up and the boat stopped, and then this thing just slipped off and went away. And the thing that I find really funny, and I think possibly as an angler or as somebody who can be a bit obsessive, I understand this, is that, you know, they were so focused on the race and we mustn't lose time that nobody thought to photograph this thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's just
right.
So that, you know, this, get this thing off the boat. You know, we've got to carry on the race. And so one of those sort of tantalizing stories where,
right,
even today everybody has, you know, everybody has cameras, but in certain situations nobody gets to take that shot, and it's just left as this, you know, this crazy sort of loose end. But
they might have lost that race and ended up winning like a national prize for having proven the existence of the Kraken. I mean,
absolutely. And you know, and I mean, you know, the chances of that happening again, it's one of these things, you know, it's one of those absolute sort of chance in a million things that normally that is never going to happen to you. But,
right.
But I think it's about sort of being, keeping your eyes open for when things do happen.
Well, see, so that's, I found that was a great episode. Really enjoyed it. But in Mysteries of the Deep, I will tell you, I grew up along the shores of Lake Michigan, so I'm always interested in the Great Lakes and the stories of shipwrecks in the Great Lakes, and you know, and so you were in an episode about talking about this 140-year-old wreck at the bottom of the Great Lakes, and then you get into this other thing about a Nazi submarine that could destroy the world, and this is the one that really hooked me because I thought, why isn't this getting more national news attention if everything about this dark secret buried inside this Nazi submarine is true? There should be more people following the story than just through you on Discovery.
Well, exactly. I mean, the thing is, though, I think there's quite a few stories there which you think, why haven't more people heard of this?
Right.
And I think, you know, I think partly it's because Again, we are dealing with the unknown here. And what we, you mentioned in River Monsters, at the end of River Monsters, here is, we are showing you a flesh and blood creature. And, we sort of nicely tie up a story in a way.
Right.
A lot of the stories, particularly in the ocean, what we're trying to do in Mysteries of the Deep is, yes, we are, the aim is always to solve something. But we are bringing to bear sort of modern science, modern
yes.
sort of specialties within science. And generally, each story is not about solving the mystery, but just bringing a little
yeah.
bit more understanding,
okay.
sort of like, and maybe pointing the way forward to a day when, yes, we do know what this is. So,
yeah.
so that submarine that's down there, which
yeah.
nobody knows, it's not going to be an easy one to explore because we don't know exactly what's on it. So,
okay, but let's tell the story. Let's tell the story. How did this Nazi sub end up on the bottom of the ocean? And then let's talk about what could be buried inside.
Right. I know that's been shown, but something to bear in mind is a lot of people don't catch things first time round.
Okay. Give me this one. It's like I'm really worried about this thing. So tell me what you feel comfortable without ruining it for everybody. But talk about what you know about the Nazi sub.
Yeah, well, this is it's sitting in the bottom of the ocean off Norway, and. There are stories that maybe Hitler's last will and testament is on there, which would be quite a
fun. That'd be interesting. Yep.
But we're warfare. We're obviously talking things that were sort of classified, weaponry. There's lots of the ocean is used to dump stuff that you think is never ever going to. Never going to surface, and so quite a lot of dangerous, munitions all
yes.
over the place. And the Baltic Sea, in particular, loads of explosives down there. So there's this submarine sitting down there, and I think since World War II, we've now become aware that in terms of particularly things like pollution, there is no such place as a way. You chuck things in the sea.
Right.
They don't disappear. They're still down there. And I think from the point of view of curiosity, raising this submarine would be, would be great. But it's structurally unsound. It possibly contains dangerous materials. So
yeah.
Any kind of poking around risks ending badly.
But when we talk about it, it has toxic substances in it. At the risk of, and I don't want to ruin it for people who haven't seen it and all of that, but we're not talking about like toxic substances that are underneath our sink. We're talking about something which, if the speculation from your experts is true, it really is a ticking time bomb. Is it too much of an exaggeration to say it would put the whole world at risk?
I don't know. That's the thing. Nobody knows. I mean, the thing is, because ocean water is all totally continuous, you drop
yeah.
in one part of the world and it can reach somewhere else. I mean, that's why you had, all the worry about, say, Fukushima. You have radioactivity
right.
there. It doesn't just stay there. And I think the thing about a submarine is a pretty robust vessel, but it corrodes over time.
Yes.
So, maybe at some point, stuff starts leaking out.
Yes.
So it's something that, yeah.
Well, I don't want to ruin it, and I don't want to be the one to give away whether the butler did it or not, but I will say that one stayed with me because I kept thinking, okay, I'd like an update tomorrow. I want an update like really soon. Because there are that, and it's not just that, right? I mean, this is, as you point out, we have, it's almost hard to imagine, and the Bermuda Triangle is a good example of this, where there are just tons and tons of ships lying on the bottom, and they are rusting away, and whatever was inside of them it may have long since been covered by, you know, natural organic material, or maybe not. And we don't even know yet what we don't know, because some of these ships, they may have had secret cargo that wasn't even on a manifest somewhere. And it could also be related to World War II, and we just don't know.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the thing is, on a, you know, what these stories make clear as well, I think, is on a more mundane level, and that's, you know, things that we sort of, stuff that we chuck in rivers, plastics, right. You know, microplastics is a big thing now, and, you know, even right down at the bottom of oceanic trenches, you're finding creatures that have absorbed microplastics. So it's, you know, things do get everywhere. So there's a sort of, you know, there's a serious lesson behind some of these stories as well, about just, never mind sort of waste created, you know, in the course of warfare, or stuff that's dumped after a war, but just everyday household material is likewise, is becoming a bit of a time bomb.
So a question I often have when I'm watching, and we're talking with Jeremy Wade, his new show is called Mysteries of the Deep on Discovery, is I wonder, like, what fish will you eat or don't eat? How has all of these investigations into river monsters and mysteries of the deep changed the way you look at our food chain?
I mean, most of the fish that I go looking for are very hard to find. And pretty well all of them are much more scarce now than they used to be. And what that says about rivers, certainly, is that rivers are... Yeah, the life in rivers is very depleted, yeah, compared to what it used to be. So eating fish out of rivers is something that's, it's not really sustainable now. There's too many people, and there's not enough fish.
Right.
I do occasionally eat river fish. For instance, in the Amazon, if I know that a particular fish is plentiful in a particular place, and if I'm in the middle of nowhere, I might eat it. I've eaten piranhas. I've eaten sort of sushi piranhas before. But obviously, I mean, the other thing is, I mean, most of the fish that I'm normally after are large fish, which would be way too big for a meal. And, it doesn't make sense killing a large fish if you're going to eat something.
Granted. But in terms of the food chain and what's in the water that these fish are swimming in, and I mean, I have people that will just they won't eat certain shellfish now. Period. Doesn't matter where they caught it, because as you said, there's just too much stuff out there. I don't know whether that's accurate or a belief that's based in, you know, some sort of rumor or myth. But what about you? What won't you eat?
Well, what's in our food is something that should really concern everybody, and it's something that we need more information about. And that information is actually, we live in the information age, but a lot of that information is very hard to get. But no, we are just about everything we eat, we are taking in trace quantities of all sorts of things that... ideally, we wouldn't want inside us, you know, pesticide residues and stuff that is just spreading. You know, you put it in one place, it spreads throughout the environment. And it is a concern, because a lot of these things, a lot of them are known carcinogens. Other things are, we don't know what they do. But
what about sushi? I mean, do you blink at sushi?
I'm not a great fan of sushi, to be honest. No, I mean, I don't eat a lot of fish, but I don't. A lot of sushi is tuna, and again, tuna is it's a predator. It's at the top of the food chain. I think if we like fish, we should be eating stuff that is further down the food chain, smaller fish, because it's the whole process of producing a big fish. It's very inefficient in terms of energy, and also the big fish are not so numerous. So it's a real shame, actually, because I do a lot of things I like from the point of view of taste, but from the point of view of sort of ecology and also health, I mean, because again, you get things like mercury, which will concentrate up the food chain. So even people who like, say, tuna should limit their intake of it, because you're taking in a bit of mercury as well.
But I've noticed on some of these episodes, you'll sit down with the local chief, right? Because you're getting, you need to get the story or you need to get help. And so how do you do when you sit down and they offer you food and you're in the middle of nowhere and you know it would be insulting for, you know, and at cross purposes for what you're trying to get out of the indigenous people that you're working with to either find out the truth behind a story in River Monsters or to actually get their help to get to that part of the river. What have you had to eat along the way that you wish you didn't have to eat, especially on camera?
Yeah, well, no, that's happened, you know, a number of times.
And, I can kind of see it in your face. I'm watching these episodes. I'm like, he's struggling. Jeremy, wait, dude's struggling right now.
Yes, and you know, that's part of the process. It's almost a sort of, it's about sort of mutual respect. And yes, exactly. I mean, in River Monsters, a lot of what I managed to achieve in terms of catching fish was a collaboration with local people. So I'm dependent on them sharing their knowledge. And that needs to be a sort of a two-sided thing. I need to sort of respect them. And if they, if they offer me some food, which might not look very tasty, it might be very nutritious. Things like certain grubs are very nutritious, but
right,
they don't look very appetizing. But I've had various types of grubs on occasion.
you don't crave a grub now and again. You don't.
You know, there's one particular grub which is quite tasty.
Really?
In the Amazon. Yeah, it lives in They live in palm nuts, and you find a palm nut on the ground, and it'll have these little holes in, which is where the adult had sort of laid the egg in the first place. And if you cut that open, you find this thing that looks like a giant maggot, about sort of half the size of your little finger, and it's wriggling around. And if you can sort of get past the whole part of you that doesn't want to go anywhere near it,
right,
it's actually got this very you hold the head, so you don't necessarily eat that, but you sort of squirt the rest out, a bit like a toothpaste tube, you know, so all the sort of the goo that's inside, which is this very rich sort of protein soup, and it's got a very nice oily coconutty flavor. And if you gave that to somebody without telling them what it was, that, you know, they'd probably ask for more. So it's and the other thing which is very much worth, you know, bearing in mind, I did a lot of traveling on my own before I was doing it on TV, and there's a well-known phrase, I don't know where it comes from, but hunger is the best sauce. You know, if you are hungry, it is amazing what you will eat, and it's amazing what you will enjoy, you know, things that you otherwise perhaps wouldn't think of going anywhere near.
Right. I think of that when I'm watching, occasionally watch a show called Naked and Afraid, and the things they are reduced to eating that they actually find pleasure in, which they never thought they would. It backs that up. All right. So thank you for everything. And I will turn, for people who have, you know, a cable package where they get a digital platform that allows them to go look at this new series that Jeremy Wade is doing on Mysteries of the Deep. I really do focus you on the Nazi toxic hell sub story. And I'll be curious to see whether you get an update coming up, because you could update this maybe even, you know, into the next season. Somebody's got to get to work on that story before it's too late. And that's all I'll say for now. Coming up, we're going to give the phone numbers so that people can ask questions of Jeremy Wade, and then also whether that's the old show or about him or about the new series. And then coming up at the top of the hour on Coast to Coast, we'll go to open lines. And I think what we've been hearing here in the last hour is it's so much fun. Let's just keep that going. And even though there's some breaking stories that are, you know, been dominating the news for the last 5 or 6 days, where in this case the news story about the Southern District of New York district attorney might even be dominating the story for the next couple of days, let's just keep it fun coming up when we get to open lines on the way on Coast to Coast. And if you've missed any of this show so far, if you're a Coast insider, you can go back and listen to anything. You go back and listen to the first time that Jeremy Wade was on Coast to Coast, because that was great too then. So your questions, your comments coming up next, and then we'll get to open lines at the top of the hour on Coast to Coast AM. In for George Norrie, this is Ian Punnett. In for George Norrie tonight, open lines at the top of the hour. Grab your chance to talk with Jeremy Wade. Mysteries of the Deep, his latest show on Discovery Channel next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Well, Jeremy Wade, I hope you're having fun on Coast to Coast. The Twitter response to you is always fun, too. What's your presence like these days on social media, by the way?
It's fairly non-existent. I mean, the production company and you know, Discovery put stuff out, but personally, I try and keep a bit at arm's length. I think social media is very good at certain things, but I think there's a dark side to it, which I'm not too keen on. Social media ought to be run a lot better than it is, but unfortunately, it's all we've got at the moment.
Well, you know, I think it would really ultimately come down to is people ought to be better run than they are. So I don't know that they'll ever get better. But I have fun with it, especially when people are singing your praises. East of the Rockies, let's go with Joe, who's in Long Island on Coast to Coast AM. Joe?
Yeah. Hi, Jeremy. Wanted to ask you about, like, how some of these rivers, for example, the Nile, the Amazon, and rivers in China, they run through different countries eventually, and what some of the disputes are, whether it be over pollution, fish, damming of the waterways. And my second question would be about, I know, for example, out here on Long Island, there's a lot of mysteries off Montauk Point, right off the land, but if you go on a Pacific island in the middle of the Pacific, an isolated remote island, are you even getting more strange phenomena?
All right, let's get the answers to that. First of all, on the politicization of rivers.
Yeah, I mean that is a very big issue, and I think a particularly big one is dams and just access to water. Water's becoming more of a precious commodity. And so, for example, you have, one river springs to mind. There's a river called the Bias, which runs through India and Pakistan. And I think on the India side, it's been dammed, you know, so they're keeping all the water. But if anyone damages that dam, it floods half of Pakistan, you know. So I mean, rivers, in a sense, are easier in terms of fish populations and river health. They are easier to do something about than the oceans, because, you know, there's fewer jurisdictions that tend to impinge on a river. But even so, generally speaking, even if you've got a couple of countries involved, you know, one on one side, one on the other, or, you know, more significantly, if you've got one upstream, I think there's a big problem at the moment with China is damming certain rivers,
right,
which then flow into other countries.
And, right.
You know, so it's potentially a massive problem for the future, just who controls fresh water.
And then the second question was about the Atlantic versus the Pacific side of the U.S. or the waters therein. Which one has the better mysteries?
Well, it's interesting. You know, I think people tend to assume that the big mysteries are always going to be far away. But the thing about water is you could actually have stuff that's sort of under your nose, which isn't known very well, simply because that underwater world is just... it is very difficult to, we're just dealing with very small clues. So I would say that, you know, remote doesn't necessarily mean more mysterious.
Yep. Let me go to west of the Rockies. Wayne is in Tacoma on Coast to Coast. Wayne?
Good evening, gentlemen. Thank you. Thank you very much for taking my call. Sir Eon Punnett. Jeremy, you're one of my heroes. I love what you've done in the fishing area of the world. And I'm wondering, I'm guessing that as a fisherman, you maybe watch some of the other sea-related programs on TV, like the crab fisherman, Alaska crab fisherman up in Alaska. Have you watched them at all?
Yeah, you're talking about any of those shows, right? Those are great.
Yes, Deadliest Catch. Yes, I do. Yes, I don't have. It's funny. I don't have a lot of time to watch myself, but I keep aware of what else is out there for sure.
Yeah. Wayne, did you have another question?
Yes, there was an episode where they were on vacation and they were fishing for a legendary giant fish in a lake in Alaska. They were using either 240-gallon or 255-gallon drums for bobbers, and it took the bobbers down.
Wow. I missed that one.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I just wondered if you saw that episode at all. And then I had a question about
the... We got to limit it to two. I got other people hanging up. But you didn't see a 50-gallon bobber? That's a big damn fish.
I think I might know where that was, because we did an episode of River Monsters where...
Oh, did you?
Yes, indeed. I mean, stories of a... This was Lake Iliamna. I don't know if that's the same place that they went to, and rumored large creatures there. You could spend a lifetime, I think, researching that place. But I think what it looks like there, I mean, my take on that is possibly a landlocked population of white sturgeon, which do grow massive, and they would take a bobber that size under. So there is stuff in Lake. I was going to say I would love to drain it and see what's there, but I know that would be totally
right.
If that was possible, that would be unacceptable. I think you've got to find things out in a sort of
better way than that.
Exactly, but I mean,
that's not sustainable to drain all the, to get all the mysteries out.
Yeah, and also it's sort of too easy in a way. I think you've got to use things, but there's very interesting stuff there for sure.
I love that. Let me say sturgeon again, pike, muskie. You know, it is pretty interesting that there are lots of different fish that grow to sizes that, if people knew how big they really were, they, you know, it might even support something like Nessie, where we think, you know, would never actually see a sturgeon that big that could pull something like that down. But it kind of, in a way, backs up how maybe we don't know what's underneath Loch Ness. You've done a Loch Ness thing along the way, haven't you?
We did, and actually, it does feature in one of the Mysteries of the Deep episodes.
Right.
So I won't say too much about it. I mean, the thing about Loch Ness, I mean, it is horrendously deep, unlike most most lakes, which aren't deep. But from a biologist's point of view, you need a certain amount of shallow water, and shallow water is where the weed grows, it's where the small fish grow, and that forms the basis of the food chain. You don't really have those productive shallow areas in Loch Ness, so it's not a very rich water. However, there is a link between the loch and the sea, so over geological time this would have got been deeper than it is now, so it's not impossible that something might have swum in from the sea. And again, you know, maybe that was a sturgeon, but the Mysteries of the Deep episode is fascinating because that was a New Zealand scientist, and basically a whole new line of research, and that's going in and looking for stray bits of DNA that are floating around, which is something that we can do now.
I love that. Again, we're talking with Jeremy Wade. Mysteries of the Deep is his new show on Discovery. I've been to Loch Ness once. I spent a weekend there, and I'll never forget is taking the boat out, just typical American sightseeing stuff, but I went out and the water was like coffee. It was the darkest water I've ever been on, and I've never seen anything like it since.
Yeah, I've dived. Well, I dive there, and it is very spooky because it's suddenly you can't see more than a few feet, and there was this tree trunk that suddenly loomed in front of me.
Whoa.
For a moment. It looks like it's like, oh, what's that? It is an incredibly spooky place. I will say that for it.
Chris, first-time caller line is in Tulsa on Coast to Coast AM for Jeremy Wade. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, thank you. Hey, I'm in Oklahoma, right? And we have all these giant lakes, okay? And there are myths about, and we talk about river monsters. We have myths about these giant catfish.
Right.
That are hidden in the bottom of the rivers.
I believe them.
yeah, and they're down there. All they got to do is open their mouths, blow the dam, and the little fish just rush in. They don't even have to swim. Okay? So, so truth or myth?
Yeah.
And these guys are so big, I don't want to swim. Okay.
Well, let's go ahead and get his answer because I've seen that episode and it was fascinating. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, below dams is a perfect place for giant catfish. And I mean, you know, if you look at, say, blue catfish and also flatheads, you know, they can grow 100 pounds plus. And in special situations, the interesting thing about a fish, unlike a land animal, most land animals have a maximum size that they get to. So something like an elephant gets to a certain size. You know, all adult elephants are about the same size. With fish, fish can keep on growing, and the reason for that is that the water supports the body weight. So a land animal that would fall over and not be able to move around if it grew too big, that rule doesn't apply to fish. So fish can keep on growing. So whenever I hear stories about giant fish under the water, although I have a scientific background, I don't necessarily rule those out. I think, you know, that there is obviously a sort of a realistic maximum that you can get to, but yeah, big catfish below dams. And I think in that kind of situation, what most people regard as heavy fishing gear would be inadequate for some of the fish that can potentially be down there. And also, again, below dams, you often have structure and snags. So those
sure.
fish are, you know, they just go into a bit of a cave or round a rock and the line goes, you know. So again, metaphorically, you know, maybe I wouldn't want to drain those places, but some kind of sort of X-ray vision.
Oh, know, yeah.
And that's often what I try and do. I'm sort of trying to visualize what it's like beneath, you know, beneath the water. What's down there? Whereabouts is it?
This is why everybody should watch River Monsters and the new show Mysteries of the Deep. But if you go back in your, if you have a platform, a digital platform that allows you to go see it, because I think, first of all, let me just say, and, you know, we could do this all night long, but I know time is limited and I want to get to these other callers, but you are such a great storyteller. So even just people who like a good story, you build these things really well. These episodes are formulated beautifully, but I like the parts and you show them often where you, Mr. Pro Angler, you, Mr. Experienced One, you're a little unevenly matched on your test line, the line you're fishing with ends up snapping a couple of times, and that's when you begin to understand, okay, maybe this thing is bigger than I think it was.
Yeah, I mean, I always try and gear up for the biggest fish
right.
that I'm likely to encounter. So, you know, if the line goes, that is my failing for not having geared up enough. But
yeah.
No, I mean, the thing that I find quite scary sometimes is I will often use ridiculously heavy gear in fresh
water. Yes, right.
And the weak link is not the equipment. It's me. You know, if anything goes, it's, you know, it's going to be me going in the water. And when you have that kind of scenario in fresh water, it really does make you think, well, this sort of doesn't feel right. You know, risk,
yep.
they're not supposed to have stuff this big, but they do sometimes.
Well, they do. Catfish the size of Buick. So we got wildcard line. Harry is in Brooklyn on Coast to Coast. Harry, you're talking with Jeremy Wade.
Hello, Jeremy. How are you? I've been a big fan of yours for years.
Hi there, Harry. Well, it's nice to speak to you.
No, it's a pleasure. I never thought in a million years I'd ever talk to you.
I know, Nick Cole.
This is really cool and a real pleasure. I've watched all your episodes, every single one, twice probably.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, I've seen you in so many different adventures. What would you say would be one of your greatest adventures?
Yeah, always a good question.
Yeah, I mean, it's very hard to pin down. But I think for me, it is about the fish, but it's also about the place. And back in River Monsters Season 2, I think it is, which seems a very long time ago now, we went to the Congo in Central Africa. And the thing about the Congo is, well, obviously we're living in very sort of different times now, but I mean, generally speaking, the modern world, everywhere has become so accessible in a pretty short time. But that part of Africa is a place where very few outsiders go. So quite apart from the fish, which are incredible, I mean, I was after this massive Goliath tiger fish there, but just being in a place where you really feel cut off from the rest of the world, where you do feel sort of thrown on your own ability to survive and just sort of get through the day. I mean, that is something, you know, that's a pretty special experience. And part of that as well is just it forces you into contact with the people there. And, you know, and that's always, you know, that's always a, you know, a big part of it, sort of getting to know the different cultures.
Love that. Wildcard line, Daniel is in Arkansas on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Daniel.
Yes. I see we only have a couple of minutes left.
So be quick.
Arkansas River, Lake Dardanelle, tallest, deepest river lake on the Arkansas River system. Now, before they build the dam, you have to make the highway across the road, across the lake.
Sure.
So you pile up all these rocks. Bang, 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 bang. And then you fill up the lake. Now you have a road across the lake. Now, you're driving across this viaduct, and I had to slow down to match the speed of it. But what would be under the water that would be able to create a wake going about 40 to 45 miles an hour you can track it?
Yeah, so as you're so you're saying you're driving across that bridge and you could see something was creating a wake at about the speed you were driving.
Yes.
Okay. What would that be? Well, let's go ahead, Jeremy. What would that be?
That is fast for a sustained
Is it possible?
Sometimes, you know, Loch Ness, people there see things moving, and sometimes you can see sort of a serpentine thing on the surface that looks a bit like a creature, but it is actually the wake of a boat. Maybe the boat has gone, but the waves are still moving. But generally, you know, those waves are not moving fast. They are they are just rolling in a fairly leisurely manner. I don't know. I mean,
Mysteries of the Deep, Arkansas edition coming up.
I know a lot of super yachts have their sort of onboard submarines. You know, I don't know if anybody plays around with mini subs in fresh water. Something I've fancied doing, but I've been in a mini sub down in the ocean, but not in fresh water. No, I'm afraid I.
Well, it's a good one. It's good to end on a show about mysteries of the deep with a mystery of the shallows, anyway, in Arkansas. Thank you, Jeremy Wade. I know we borrowed as much time as you would allow us. I would love sometime to get you back on and talk about that Nazi sub when you can find out more about it. I remain just a dedicated fan, and I know that so many more people were hoping to talk to you that you have to come back sometime and visit with us. But I'm glad in the meantime life is a little more stable as you're shooting this new show. Love having it. Love seeing it on the Discovery Channel. Open lines coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett.